I would say that anyone who listens to the show or anyone who reads books or thinks about this stuff, like, you know, there's something inside them which is saying, like, there's more. There's more. I want to know more. You need to know more, whatever that would be.
For some odd reason, I had to have more. You know, it was like a hook. It got me, and I knew that I had to continue looking. You know, whether it was in those woods or other places, I knew I had to branch out and do this more often.
Many things we could talk about that experience, but one of them, I just realized there's people who just cannot deal with the idea that something in our experience is outside of the material or the explainable. And
you're okay with me being involved in the occult, but I'm a weirdo because I saw UFO. All right. That makes a whole lot of sense.
He is a reptilian hybrid. So he looks normal, but he actually is a reptilian.
He never believed me. All these things were happening, he never believed me. He goes, oh, yeah, right, sure. I see images walking down the hall at night, big black images, and like almost like the thing on Harry Potter. It was just bizarre.
Spiritual, they do, you know, they let out good spiritual energy. So that's what a lot of witchcraft is, she explained to me. But she said, that's not what our coven believes. We're the other kind of witch. So we're all getting kind of terrified at this point.
He said, you were disrespectful of their burial ground. You, as a Native American, should know better than to build there. And the spirits are angry with you for doing that.
Parents, listen to your children. Do not rule the paranormal out. That is so important. Please believe them. Help them.
I looked up, and this upright, walking, hairy creature was walking into the tree line about my 3 o'clock position, and it had the deer over its shoulder. It grabbed its head, took it, and just smashed it up against a tree.
You do have a special Valentine's Day tour coming up because, whoa, I think I just saw an orb fly by you, by the way.
Did you? Fantastic.
Sure, that's
I'm not
what it
surprised.
Was. I'm going to go look at it after, but
I
think yeah,
you have
yeah,
a lot
just,
of energy around me.
Yeah, just like quickly across your right side there.
Oh, wow. I didn't even feel
cool.
it.
We'll have to look at that after.
There's happy energy in here. I feel it's happy, which is good.
Oh, yes, it's that time again. Time for your Friday Night Fright. This is Unexplained Incorporated. I'm your host, Phantom Phil. We are open for business and ready to believe you as I serve up to you another edition of the Friday Night Fright. Tonight, on this 19th of November, 2021, we get the second half of back-to-back guests from beautiful British Columbia. Last week, we had Jason Hewlett from Kamloops, he was checking in from. We go southbound to the mainland of Vancouver to check in with the president and the lead investigator of the Vancouver Paranormal Society, Kelly Claire Bird. And for those of you who were wondering, she was supposed to be on last week's show, but unfortunately fell ill and could not record until a later time, so she had to switch spots with Jason, which was very easy, and I actually am kind of glad it worked out this way, because I had set specific topics I wanted to cover with Jason, and I have some I want to cover with Kelly tonight, but some of the topics I discussed with Jason on the last episode are going to be brought up again in this chat. And yes, that means we have to go over my Halloween night photo just one more time. And I'm really curious to hear about her perspective on that. And I'm sure I'll talk about that a little bit more in the outro with you. And please, true believers, check out the outro of this one after Kelly and I are done, because I have a major announcement involving Unexplained 100, which will drop February 4th of 2022. I can't give you details of the whole thing, but what I can tell you is real exciting, and you're not going to want to miss it. That is coming up after the interview with our next guest. But first, let's hand it over to Angel Card Amy to give us a more formal introduction of Kelly from the Vancouver Paranormal Society. And remember, Angel Card Amy will be returning to the show on December 3rd for the case study of Annabelle. But here she is with our intro for this week.
Kelly Claire Berg is the director, vice president, as well as one of the lead investigators of the Vancouver Paranormal Society. Hear about the apparition in the summer of 72 that first got her on this path to this line of work. We will also hear about how she vets potential clients and team members, plus some good old-fashioned ghost stories. Get your ticket to the mainland and enjoy the ride.
True believers, we are back again with another guest from beautiful British Columbia. That's two in a row for us. I'd like to officially welcome Kelly Claire Berg from the Vancouver Paranormal Society. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. I know we had to switch things around a bit with some scheduling snafus, but I'm very happy you made it. How are you holding up right now?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And once again, a big shout out to Jason Hewlett for getting us in touch with each other. We're going to talk about him in a little while. First, I want to know more about you. First of all, can you just identify your role with the Vancouver Paranormal Society and what it is you all do? And then I want to know what has been going on with some of your most recent investigations, because I do follow your page on Instagram, and looks like you had some really exciting ones closer to Halloween. So I'd like to hear a bit about those. But first, tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I am currently the president of the Vancouver Paranormal Society. Peter Wren from Canadian Paranormal Foundation passed me the team back in July. And so that's what I do. So we are a scientific research team. So we don't utilize psychics or mediums on our team. We're trying to, validate the claims of the clients when they reach out to us and find reasonable explanations for the activity they may be having. We work with a lot of historical locations as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is it true? I've heard this is the oldest paranormal society in British Columbia, but also, is it not the oldest one in all of Canada? Is that true?
It is. So our team was established as Vancouver Paranormal Society we were actually established as a team in 1993 as Vancouver Paranormal. But there is question around the team under that name starting back in the 60s or 70s. So that could actually arguably make us the longest running paranormal research team in North America. From what I understand anyway.
Yeah. Does that help any of the street cred of your name, you think?
I think it does. I think more so that we are a government registered nonprofit society, probably the only one in Canada that I'm aware of anyway. I could be wrong, but I think that goes a long way to speaking how we roll as a team and our credibility. We do have to adhere by society rules and I think it does go a long way for sure.
Good, good. More established in the trenches, the better you can promote your brand, so to speak. So yeah.
Yeah. And if I can add, I mean, there are a lot of teams out there. And it's not to say that we're the best team. I'm not saying that at all. We're just long running. And I think there are so many teams out there that, you know, they roll the way they roll. That's great. It works for them and it works for their clients and the same for us. And I think that's really important to note.
Absolutely. So I remember one of your latest investigations you were posting and reporting on, I believe, was it called the Stewart House?
Oh, so that's historic Stewart Farm in
Stewart Farm. Yeah.
So we've been working with the farm and the Museum of Surrey for many, many years now, longer than the length of time I've been with the team. So I know we've been showcased at Stewart Farm on Global News a couple of times, actually. That's when Peter Wren had begun investigating there. So we do fundraising for them through our public presentations each October. So it's a really, really lovely place. It's just full of history and paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm. Is there any activity from these fundraisers and investigations you can specifically pinpoint, or is it just been kind of a little bit each time, or is there anything major that has happened?
I think, you know, it just depends on each time we investigate. There are times where we have activity, and there are times when we capture nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Who really knows why that is? I know I don't, but when we do have the activity, it's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why you do this after all.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many, I guess, I don't know, really know how to say it. So many levels of activity based in the history of the farm. So you have John and Annie Stewart, who were the homesteaders there, and they were a middle class family. Farmers, and they had, you know, workers, immigrant workers that worked for them from China, as well as Aboriginal workers as well. So there's different legs of activity based on those different pieces, right? So I think that's really interesting. So when we conduct our investigations there, depending on which building we're in, and where that history came from, that's how we're going to direct our investigations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what you got to do. So I believe, if I read this correctly from your bio off the Society's website, you had some paranormal experiences growing up, from what I understand. Nearly every investigator I've had on the show, not all of them, but nearly all of them, had some sort of experience or repeated experiences growing up. Now, to quote another famous Vancouverite, Brian Adams, with his big hit Summer of 69, you refer to an incident, I believe, that happened in the summer of 72. Now, would you be able to elaborate on that a little bit? And was this the first time you had any type of paranormal encounter? Or like what went down with you that summer that got this all going?
Well, I think it's important to note that, you know, even as a very, very young girl, younger than 10, I always felt like there was more to us. As a young child, I don't know how I could even explain that I had that knowledge or feeling. So I always felt like there was more to us than just our bodies, and I never felt like I belonged here. It's very odd. But at age 10, that specific experience was my first actual paranormal experience. So, you know, you got the neighborhood kids that ran in packs in the neighborhoods and went exploring. And it was obviously a nice summer day and early evening. And all of us neighborhood kids, there are just a ton of us, decided to trek over to Pete's Market, which is just a couple of blocks away from where we lived in North Burnaby. And behind that market, that was an awesome market too. Lots of really cool candies and stuff, right?
Nice.
But they have these old shacks in behind. And I don't know that there are horses. Like back in that day, there was still some farmland around. And but these buildings, little shacks, were no longer in use and they were dilapidated. And in one of the shacks, there were some floorboards that were missing. And you could see a packed down mound of dirt, like the size of a grave.
Oh, 6 feet. Yeah,
right? Over top of it was an old hangman's noose, all tattered and everything.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, probably some neighborhood kids set it up. Who knows, right? You know, it's these are the kinds of things of, you know, urban legends kind of thing. That's where those kind of come through, right? So, and I think there was one attached to that as well. So anyway, you know, we all went to our respective homes, and I went home, went to bed, and I was not in bed for maybe 10 minutes. And I have probably just a couple of feet in between my bed and the closet door, and I'm wide awake. And I look over beside me, and there's this floating opalescent skull hanging midway in the air, not on the wall, not on anything. And it was glowing opalescent. And you know, you do that thing where you blink and you rub your eyes. Am I really seeing this? And I was frozen in fear, and this thing wasn't going away. And finally, my mother came into the hallway, flicked on the hall light, went into the linen closet across from my bedroom door. And that was my cue to just, I was out of that room in a shot, and I never slept in that room again.
Never.
No. And that room had actually just been redesigned and decorated for me. And I never slept in it again.
So a couple of questions on that. When you moved to another room to sleep, did you have any repeat experiences like that at all? None whatsoever.
No.
Wow.
And I'm the only one in the family that has ever experienced anything. My family thinks I'm nuts, of course.
Yeah.
But they must have known something had happened, because my fear was quite palpable, right?
Yeah. All these years later, did you ever go back and investigate further history of your house to see if there was some type of hidden event that may have caused this? Or what do you think?
No. I think if it was anything, it was something that had followed from the sugar shacks.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've never had any activity at that house before. I mean, I was a year old when we moved into that house. It was a brand new house. For the most part. So the house still stands.
So it's likely something that may have followed you from there. I mean, that to me, that sounds like it could be the most plausible explanation
I think so too. And you know, when you're younger, I think you're more susceptible to things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that being followed home happens very often, even to investigators. It does happen. I've had that happen before. After an investigation, but I think when you're a child, and I think I was open to things, because, you know, going back to that feeling I had, you know, that we're not just about our bodies, and it felt like we were different. There's something more to us than just our physical lives, right? So I think there, you know, I might have been open to that, and something was able to, I don't know, connect with that.
Yeah. I would agree with that for sure. I've heard some very interesting stories in the year and a half I've been doing this show, especially from investigators' sightings experiences from when they were younger. But I think you're the very first one who has come on here and said that they saw like a glowing disembodied skull in suspended animation. So that's pretty cool. I just got to give you props for that.
You know, I got to be different, right?
Yeah. Of course. And I want to touch on this because you've brought it up more than once. And I think there's so much weight and depth behind the way you've said it. You said repeatedly when you were a child, you felt like there was more to us and that you didn't belong. Mm-hmm. With that being said, to elaborate, at any point in your childhood or even in present day, were you maybe energetically or telepathically connected to some residual past life energy, do you think? And did you have any past life work done? Because just from what I've researched and understood, children and people later in life who have those feelings, it's like their soul, they've felt their soul escape their body before, and they could be clinging on to residual energy from the past. So like, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, and I do have thoughts on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, before I became an investigator, like quite a few years ago, actually, I had a spiritual awakening. It was just the oddest thing. I just found myself all of a sudden just needing to read up on angels. And so I was going to the bookstore like almost every day and just gobbling up these books on angels. And then I guess when I felt, well, let me back that up a little bit. I'll kind of elaborate on that.
Sure.
So one of these books, it may sound silly, but I just did it because I didn't know what was going on with me. It was just the weirdest thing. And it was an insatiable need. So anyway, in one of these books, that, you know, it's, you write a letter to your guardian angel, you give her a name and you put it under your pillow and sleep on it.
Mm.
Well, I did that, you know, it's kind of cheesy, but I did do that. And so I went to work the next day and I had to drive the program van. I worked in a group home for at-risk youth at the time. And I had to go pick up our meat order for the month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving down Willingdon Avenue in North Burnaby, going towards Hastings, the intersection. And there was this big blue Beaumont car in front of me. And I locked onto this car because this woman, she actually looked very much like Janis Joplin.
Oh.
Long, dark, kind of wavy, kind of, you know, just flailing hair. And she kept throwing her head back and looking at me, not looking where she's going driving. The light turns red ahead of her. And I'm looking at her incredulously, like she's getting my gaze, like making eye contact. It was crazy, just nuts. And I blinked just for a split second, a microsecond, and she was gone.
Whoa.
The car was gone. There's no place her and that big car could have gone. So in this book, it said that when you do this and write that letter and sleep on it, give them a name, they will make them their presence known. Well, I don't really know what happened, but that was pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of forget where I was going with that. Oh, the past life thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, on this spiritual journey, then after the reading upon angels, all of a sudden I had this insatiable need to read up about near death and the afterlife. Like, it was just insatiable. Like, my roommate, my best friend at the time, thought it was nuts. He didn't know. None of my friends knew what to do with me because that's all I could talk about.
Wow.
So anyway, okay. I started getting this really bad headache, like a migraine type headache. And I don't get those kind of headaches. And it lasted for like 10 days. And I got to work one day and I just was going through the phone book looking for someone to help me. And I guess I was looking for spiritualist churches. And then I called this guy and he connected me with this woman who's a Reiki master in Manitoba. And she did Reiki over the phone with me.
Mm-hmm. Distance Reiki. Yep.
Yeah. So she and I moving forward became very, very good friends. And, she developed this timeline, energy timeline thing during a Reiki session where she can bring you back in time, these points in time. And I had this vision that she and I actually, probably like the 1800s or something, were spiritual medicine people and traveling from town to town on this rickety old, you know, vehicle, a cart, horse-drawn
caravan. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that was true or not, mm-hmm. but it sure seemed real. Who knows, right? I mean, who knows? I think it's possible, and I think I might have some connection to a past life. I don't know.
Would you ever consider doing past life regression, or are you on the fence about it?
Yeah, I'm pretty much open to anything, really. I haven't really looked into it. I'm pretty busy doing what I do, but
yeah,
but I think it's an interesting concept for sure. Have you?
I did one in early 2017, but there was some weirdness with it, and I don't know if it was a good thing for me, and I don't know if the person doing it was, you know, fully trained and functional to doing it. And I talked about this on a previous episode I had on the show with a hypnotist last month, so I don't want to get too much into that again, but I think I would try it again with the right person or the right environment, so to speak.
Nice. Let me know how that goes.
I will. And I'm so happy, Kelly, that you opened up about kind of your spiritual awakening and evolution, because near the end of this chat, like, I'm going through one of my own, and it's like long term. And the day we were originally supposed to record, I had some shamanic training because I'm enrolled in shamanic studies throughout the rest of this year. And some of it got pretty wild, and I'm going to save that till the end.
Okay.
Because I have other things I want to get to first, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts when I get there.
Perfect.
So, yeah. One thing I want to ask about what you do with the Paranormal Society, Jason Hewlett brought this up last week when he was talking about his new book, saying that him and Peter, for the book, extensively interviewed, and these are his words, I'm paraphrasing a little, but they're his words, like the real paranormal investigators, not the TV ones, or ghost hunters, he called them. Yeah. And we had a long, elaborate discussion about this. And just because I ask this to every single investigator I have on the show, because the answers are, they're either very similar, but some of them get quite different once in a while, or it's said very differently in a new way I've never heard before. So how are the investigations done by you and your team compared to the ones you see on television? And what are your thoughts on the television crews overall? Because I find there's either reverence or there's resentment or there's a bit of both. So I'm curious to hear where you stand.
Well, you know, it's not as exciting as they showcase it on TV, because of course they're cutting out a lot of scenes. We don't have a camera crew following us around. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I wouldn't appreciate that very much. That would just take away from what we're trying to do. I think, I know a lot of these TV shows are for entertainment purposes. I think they may claim that that they're authentic in what they're doing, and that they're not faking evidence for ratings purposes. I think I'm just going to come right out and say it's a big fat lie. Mm. there's so many investigations, more so than not, that, you know, you're not capturing anything. Mm-hmm. And you know, when it's usually when you go home to analyze your devices, that's when you capture the evidence. I think having actual activity occur during an investigation, it just doesn't happen like that. No, not very often anyway.
Yeah, it's rare.
Sometimes it doesn't. You know, you scratch your head a little bit, but nothing really tangible. Don't get me started on those orbs and ghost adventures.
No.
And I just think that a lot of these shows, they make, this is probably the biggest thing for me, and it really frustrates me, mm-hmm. is the assumptions that are made. Mm. I think it's, you know, great grandpa Joe and da 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 da, and oh, this person is stuck, the spirit is stuck, and I think this is why they're here. You know, there are just too many assumptions. We just don't know. When we capture evidence, we're only capturing little snippets that may not even mean anything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So I just, it's, for me, it's the assumptions. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah. Think about
really
it.
How do I really feel?
Yeah. Tell me how you really feel, eh? But think about it from this perspective, though. What they are doing, they're being backed by a major network that is trying to sell ads, and they're not going to sell ads on realism. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like in similar to what you do, but it's so funny. And I mean, we always pick on Ghost Adventures because they're just, they're the prime target. It's just what it is. Yeah. We give them a lot of publicity on this show just because it comes up a lot, both good and bad.
Well, but, you know, it just goes to show you though, they're probably the top rated because they push the envelope. They do what none of us would ever do because it's disrespectful.
Right.
And they engage people in the orb theory as well as being actual ghosts because that's what normal people want to see and hear. But they don't explain that it's 99.999% dust, bugs, moisture, and other artifacts.
Right, right. It can be so many different things. Yeah.
So they're misleading, in my opinion. And that's what the audience wants to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So but then again, you could argue it's a disrespectful to your organization and your profession, right? I mean, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Then I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah. It's so fascinating with what they do though. I talked about this a little bit with Jason last week as to how Zach and his crew, they seem like they're daredevils and thrill seekers. Like they're doing it for the adrenaline. And like you said, that's why they push the envelope so much. And just about everything is perceived as demonic activity. And a funny thing you said about all the assumptions, if they're, you know, investigating an abandoned saloon in like Arizona and they get some activity, it's going to sound a lot more engaging to the viewer if they're like, oh, this very well could be the ghost of Billy the Kid, instead of, well, we don't know what the heck this is, so we're just going to leave it up to you. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. I totally agree with you.
So, moving on, this is somewhat related, and I busted Jason's chops on this really well last week. And of course I have to bring it up to you and I don't want to go. I don't want to go too in depth with it. Cause I think I went a little overboard on the last episode, but so I sent you and Jason a photo I took on Halloween night at a house that is allegedly very haunted in Niagara on the Lake, Ontario, which is billed as Canada's most haunted town. I had seen this house on a ghost tour the previous summer, and it's notorious for having strange appearances in the windows for when you take photos after sunset. First time I went, I didn't see anything. The photos were just meh, whatever. This one I took about half a dozen photos, and there was nothing unusual except for the one that I sent to you and I sent to Jason. And both of you both said, yeah, there's probably not much here. Sorry.
Yeah. So when I looked at that photo, I mean, you know, in the pages that, you know, the Facebook pages and in social media, it's usually orbs and photos on a window with a glare.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And that glare, that light is going to pick up on, you know, finger smudge or, you know, dirt on the window that you might not be able to see with the naked eye unless there's a light on it. And then you've got what's in behind it or on the other side, a reflection. And these things, in my opinion, created that face that I could see.
Right.
To me, it was a great big face looking like a face.
But not actually a face.
No.
Okay.
And so what I usually find when people post pictures like that, when it usually has a reflective surface and they see a face in it, is usually some great big distorted, big, huge face. And in any legitimate photo I've ever seen of a possible spirit, they look like people.
Okay.
They're not big and distorted against the window pane. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know, I try to explain that to people, how these different factors come through and can create that effect.
Yeah. Right? As you should. I mean, because it's just.
But people don't want to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like they don't want to hear that orbs aren't spirit.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what Jason said to me.
Right and, on, Jason.
Yeah, yeah. And I even said this to him. I said, I'm not the type of guy trying to create my own thrills and hoping to look for something. It's just, I zoomed in and I saw a face and I was like, okay, this stands out from everything else. I got to at least have a couple of professionals take a look at it. And one thing Jason told me too was that he's like, did you use a flash? And I said, yeah, I used a flash. And he's like, well, it's probably the reflection on that. And that's a great point you brought up by saying that legitimate photos that could be spirit look like, you know, you and me, they look like people. They're not all distorted. And then you're going to be like, that's a demon. Exactly. That's haunted by a demon, you know, just because it looks all distorted and possessed. And you're like, No, that's not the case. It's probably an optical illusion, right?
Yeah. It's pareidolia, or layman's terms is matrixing. I always explain it this way, you know, with a little bit of stamp of humor, right?
Yeah.
You're sitting on the toilet. You got the patterned linoleum floor. You're sitting there for a while and your eyes just start picking up faces and heads on that linoleum pattern floor. Mm. And that's a really good way, I think, to explain pareidolia or the clouds or whatever. You're seeing shapes in the clouds. That's pareidolia. It's our brains trying to make sense of what it's seeing because it can't make sense of it. Right.
Yeah.
Because we're designed that way.
Yeah, it's a great way of explaining it. And I just relentlessly rode Jason into the ground by saying, thanks for bursting my bubble, man, you know. But like I said, you guys are just doing your jobs. And I have to ask you this very same question. So with what you do and your reputation, does it get to the point where people try to send you so many different types of videos and photos that you get to the point where like you just got your head in your hands and you're like, oh, like I wish you would just see that this is not the case. Like do you reach a breaking point with that type of thing? Or
yeah, you know, I do, because because people, when they do that, what I've typically found is those people that send me the videos of the orbs and pictures in windows and mirrors and things like that, they don't want to hear your answer. They, if it's not going to be, you know, what they want to hear, they send those things because they want you to tell them that they have a ghost. And I've gone so far as, and I don't do this anymore because what's the point? It makes no difference. as I'll take a video with my iPhone with a flash on. I'll shake a pillow or a blanket and I'll film the orbs and I'll send it back to them and I'll explain what this is. It's what they've got going on too. No, it's not. They get all freaky and upset with me and they don't want to hear that. They want to hear me tell them that they have a ghost in their house, you know, and they'll go as far as saying, like with the orbs, I keep my house very, very clean. It's meticulous. There's no way. There is no dust.
Well, there's dust everywhere. I'm sorry.
Everywhere. Yeah. All you have to do is, you know, sit in a room with the sunshine coming, that ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
You want to see it. That's when you can see it. But otherwise, it's naked to your eye, but the camera's going to pick it up. And it's as it's floating towards you and the light, it gets brighter and bigger as it's coming towards you. Mm-hmm. That's just normal.
That's a great explanation. Oh, my house is clean. There's no dust. Like, what are you talking about, honestly? Oh, man.
Boy in the plastic bubble or whatever that movie was, right?
Bubble Boy or whatever? Oh,
Bubble
man.
Boy, something like that.
Yeah. I bet there's even dust in there, too, but that's a whole other discussion. So in your estimation, once again, thank you for the honesty and the quick reply on it, you know, because I try not to make a habit of doing this unless like I really think there's something there. So I mean, it was a good experience overall, a good learning experience on my end. So like I have no issue. I just, you know, I like to joke about it.
That's great though, because I mean if we didn't do that, if we weren't honest about it, we wouldn't be doing our due diligence for the field of the paranormal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean real investigators, real teams, you know, are in a position where they actually have to battle these TV shows to educate people correctly on things, right? So it's an important piece of what we do, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. So in your estimation, what are some points of credible evidence of spirit you've seen through audio, photo, or video? Because I think we need to clear this up from somebody with your experience and your discernment, because it, like you said, orbs, like, no, it's likely dust or an optical illusion or a reflection. So like, what can people look for that could be credible evidence for spirit, you know, on film or video or what have you?
So if I can just touch on the orb thing a little bit again.
Yeah, yeah, keep going. Sure. I mean,
when it comes to photography, you know, photos or videos with orbs, there's no way to say that that is a spirit, and it likely isn't. But however, if you see it with your own eyes without the use of a lens, that's a little different. You know, if you're, say, sitting in your living room and it's a darkened night, it's you've got the lights down low and you see this, you know, pulsing blue or purple orb that's, you know, floating around, and you have someone else that also, someone credible that also witnesses that, then that, it could be, who knows, I don't know. But it is more credible as a personal experience. And that's when we would scratch our heads and, I don't know, right? But it's, that wouldn't be dust. When it comes to the most viable evidence, so our team, sometimes we check out, try out the as seen on TV gadgets, but we do not use any of that as a form of evidence-based. So if the REM pod goes off, that doesn't mean it's a ghost.
Yeah.
Could be anything environmental that's setting that off. But when it's coupled with a voice on your recorder that's class A, full tone, it's loud, it's clear, no disputing what's being said, and it's not any of your investigators, and you can account for that, that is evidence of possible paranormal. But remember, paranormal is that which can't be explained by mainstream science.
Yes.
Right. So even though we've got a voice on in our audio file, you know, we can, you know, clearly say that that wasn't an investigator or anyone else or outside talking or anything like that. It's interesting and it's cool, but we can't, you know, confirm or not confirm. I mean, I'll lean towards the side of it being paranormal for sure, because I've had lots of activity in my homes as well. And I know
you have this
a male voice and I'm female.
Yeah, you have this inner
into my recorder, right?
Yeah.
And it's when it comes to photo, I mean, Peter's captured some pretty amazing things when he was with our team. And I mean, there's a hotel up Merritt, outside Merritt, that and caught with an iPhone, a distinct full body apparition walking out of a bathroom doorway, wearing a uniform, an old school uniform. And we were the only people there. Even all the hotel staff were gone for the night.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, when you can validate that it wasn't a team member or any outside interferences or pareidolia when it comes to photos, that kind of thing, that's pretty credible. Now things like the SLS camera, I don't buy into that at all. It's gaming technology, and right, it's meant to map out the human form, and it will find any way that it can do that, right? Yeah. So it's kind of like that pareidolia thing too, right? So you got a room, you got a chair here, and in the background you got a maybe a cabinet further back. But when you put them together and the SLS camera is facing it, it might try and map something out, right?
Yeah, like it could take that form and make it look like a disembodied apparition or what have you. And yeah, once again, not to pick on them again, but that's what Ghost Adventures, especially in their more recent episodes, live and die by that thing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And it's just, and you would think that, I mean, they've been doing this for how long? You would think that they would know better and it would be more discerning. But again, it's not about that. It's about the entertainment, the ratings, and probably their paycheck.
Oh, their bottom line is it's driving everything, I guarantee you. Whereas you're working not for profit. It's something completely different. And that's, you know, that's how it should be in that world. So I noticed on the society's website that you're mostly like you're interested in finding new members to join. However, you have to have discernment again and due diligence, and you have to be very careful. Can you take me through a quick process of how you would vet someone to be a new team member? Because it's almost like any other workforce where you want to interview and you want to get the right candidates, because I imagine in this field too, you don't want the wrong person on your team.
Oh, we've had that so many times.
Oh, I can imagine.
We have the best team now than we've ever had in my history with the society. We're such a cohesive team. And it's funny, I interviewed almost all of them all at the same time at a Tim Hortons. It just seemed to mesh. It was awesome. Yeah. They're just such a great group of people, and we all get along so well. So when someone, when we're looking for investigators, we will splash it all over social media. And then people will go to our website and they'll fill out the questionnaire. Hopefully they'll include the questions when they send it back to me. And, you know, typically we're not looking for people who have spiritual gifts. We get a lot of people saying that they have spiritual gifts, thinking that that's an asset. For our team, it's not an asset. Other teams, it would be an asset because that's how they roll.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just we roll differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they'll send me the questions. I'll read them. If it doesn't seem like this person is going to fit, maybe they don't have a car, maybe they don't have that availability that we require, and the amount of time that's required to analyze evidence and review evidence, then I'm going to send them a kind email back and letting them know that, you know, it's probably not a good fit for us right now, but if things change, you know, you can reapply. So what I'll do is I'll have a phone call with them, and I could be on that phone for 10 minutes. I could be on that phone for an hour and a half talking to someone. It just depends on how engaging they are. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get that sense of how well they communicate, you know, why they're interested, what their passion is. I want to hear their passion, because all of us, we started with a passion, myself included. That's the most important piece, I think, is the passion, right? For the paranormal, because that's what's going to drive an investigator. And then I will arrange to meet them along with another one of our team members, and we'll interview them face to face. And then we'll decide whether or not that person's a good fit, and then we'll do some training with them. And usually what we do is do some training at my house, because I have activity at my house. And almost every time I train someone and we do a little EVP session, we capture something.
Nice.
So that's cool. But it also gives them a working understanding of what it's like, right? And then the next part is, you know, they're on a, so we've allowed them to join. They're on a 3-month probationary period. They're going to be fast tracked into investigation so that we can train them up, see how they conduct themselves on the investigation, see how they are able to analyze and, you know, their equipment and that kind of stuff. And then after 3 months, if they're doing a good job, we're going to bring them on full time, like permanent. Sometimes we find out that they don't mesh with the team. And that's a huge piece. I think probably the most important piece is getting along with everyone, mm-hmm. And connecting with everyone. Really, really important.
Yeah, given the nature of the work, you need everybody on the same page and looking out for each other and, you know, not having to look over their shoulder. And I can just imagine this is a very amazing, thorough vetting process, and I feel it's a necessary one, but I could just imagine you're on a quick 5-minute phone call with someone and you're like, you're passionate about this. So what's driving your passion? Oh, I want to be on television one day and do this. And you're probably like, click, no. See you later.
Oh yeah. I'll jump right on that. I mean, I've been contacted before to, be on TV shows. I have zero interest. Oh, yeah. I like where I'm at. I like doing what I do, because there's integrity there, right? Mm-hmm. And we're actually helping people, whether it's a residential client, business client, or a historic location, to bring awareness to them, right? So that's, and it's also for me. I'm trying to find answers.
Of course. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, on top of the passion, that's why you and the real investigators are doing it, of course. And I just want to clarify what you just said there. Like, I, doing some prep for this, I found some clips of you doing some keynote speeches or even some local media, whether it be local television or radio, but that's you being you. You're not trying to ham it up for the camera or embellish anything, right? So like, you're okay with just doing local media spots and, you know, shows like this?
Absolutely. I thrive on that stuff. You put me on stage and I'm there, man.
Mm-hmm. You're ready.
So
to
you
go.
probably saw the interesting Vancouver one.
Mm-hmm. I watched a little bit of it. Not the whole thing, but I watched some of it. Yeah.
I was so nervous. That was my first time ever speaking in front of like 400 people in a theater setting. And I swear to God, I was ready to bolt out the back door and puke in the back alley. But as soon as I got on stage, as soon as I walked on stage, I just felt all that fear and that stress literally leave through my back. And so what you saw there, you know, that little bit of quirky sense of humor and all of that, that's just who I am. And when I get to share my passion with other folks, because I am so passionate about it, I love that. And hopefully that helps other people that want to get into the field feel like, well, if she could do it, I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I love that. Peter gave me my first start. Mm-hmm. Any chance I get to pass that along to someone else, I do that. So.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Just a quick side note here, because I'm notorious for filling in some self-indulgent stories of my own journey, just because, you know, it's my show. But just to relate to what you said, I DJed weddings for quite a few years, and I got used to being in front of a certain amount of crowds. But there was this one night where my boss called me up, and I had to fill in for someone. And it was like a corporate party at a big hotel near Toronto Airport. And this was probably close to 700 people in this conference room, which is like 3 to 4 times the size of the crowd I was used to working in. And they wanted a DJ that engaged them with games and icebreakers. And that wasn't normally my style, right? Like, I wasn't out front like that, and they wanted an out front guy. So I had a bit of a rough start, but I got through it. But when I got set up on stage and I saw the size of that crowd, I was like, oh man, I'm way out of my league here. But somehow I made it through. So I could relate to what you just said there with the nerves.
Yeah. You know, when I did that, like, I always say I took one for the team, because Vancouver contacted us and met with myself and my co-VP at the time. And he took us out for lunch. We got a free lunch. It was kind of cool.
Hey, it's always good.
But he said he didn't want to do a piece on the team. He didn't want our team to be highlighted there. The premise of Interest in Vancouver is normal people in Vancouver doing extraordinary things. And they thought I was interesting because I'm a single working mom who happens mm-hmm. to be at the time the vice president of the Vancouver Paranormal Society. And they thought that was interesting. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this anyway, because I can still highlight our team through this. and reach out to people that way. And it's a good forum. So I did it. But I struggled for probably about a month. Do I write something up? So you have to do 10 minutes, right? So yeah. Do I write something up or do I wing it? And I thought, you know what? In order for me to be authentic and share my passion, I can't write it up. I have to wing it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I called it. I winged it. And I think that was the best decision on my part, because if I'd written it out, I'd be reading it, not looking at the audience. I'd probably stutter mm-hmm. and I'd miss words and you know, all that nightmare stuff. Right. So, you know, and it turned out great. And I think anytime anyone's asked to speak in front of an audience, you just have to be, for whatever your passion is, have to just be authentic, just be you. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Oh, well, try again.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I've been personally winging the show for a year and a half now, so I've gotten pretty good at it.
You did a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And Kelly, I appreciate you taking the time. We're almost up against it for time because it's starting to get a little late in my time zone. And collectively, you and I both have had like some long weeks, albeit for different reasons. So I only got a couple of more here for you. This next one, though, may take us into some different places, and we may go a few extra minutes because of it, based on what you told me earlier. I'm really curious to chat about this. So for most of 2021, I enrolled in a local, I'll just say a local place that teaches shamanic studies, not too far from me. I made the intention to go into it in 2020, but then I held off because of COVID. And then the person who I was going to learn from basically shut their business down. And it wasn't even fully because of the pandemic. It was a bunch of different reasons. But then I found someone who was closer to me and more experienced and was going to teach a lot of the same course material. So I'm going through a slew of these courses. And last weekend, when we were originally going to sit down and chat together, I had finished a full day of what is known as psychopomp training. And are you familiar with the term psychopomp?
No.
Okay. Outside of shamanic studies, I don't think it's talked about very much. And it's actually a good thing we didn't do it afterwards. We didn't record this afterwards because it wore me right out.
You must have been just zapped.
Yeah, I kind of was. Yeah. But, oh, how should I explain this? I don't have the course material right in front of me. So once again, I'm winging it. But basically, when you learn psychopomp, and I wish I could get into more of the specifics, but we did it in, you know, a sacred circle of confidence. So there's a lot of things I can't touch upon. But to sum it up, you basically learn to journey through shamanic journeying, which is a whole other can of explanation I won't get into right now for time, but you basically can journey to different realms, okay, of the spirit world. And I've had some amazing, profound things happen in journeying, which I won't get into right now, but it's really like rocked my foundation in many ways over the last year, well, close to 2 years now. Yeah. I've discovered it. But with psychopomp, this thing kind of went to a whole other level for me, because you're basically journeying in connecting with souls that are stuck. They're stuck on this earth, but they're in a different realm.
Yeah.
Like they're not visible to us, but you can access that realm. And if they need the help, you can help guide them in terms of crossing over.
That is so cool.
Oh, it is wild, like beyond description. And I'll just say this.
I want to do it now.
Yeah. On some of my own journeys that I did just that on that weekend, it was like my perspective on life, death, and the afterlife completely changed. And knowing this, the journeys I went on that brought me to those conclusions were programmed just for me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I have all the answers now because I did this course or I did these journeys. But everything I experienced, felt, and saw made so much sense. And I realized, yeah, I can't say I have all the answers, but I think we have so much of this wrong.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me an example?
Okay, I'll just sum it up real quick because I just unfortunately can't get into it much deeper. But yeah. I'll just say, no matter what you've done in your life, all the souls, I believe, end up in the same place.
Interesting.
But while they're in the same place, what happens to them afterwards is totally different, and it's dictated by how they lived, how they treated others, whether they learned the lessons they were supposed to learn or not. And I think the folks with, you know, the lower vibration lives, so to speak, and the ones who did some not so nice things, I think they come back here right away. Like, they cross over, they get a quick exam, and then they get ejected, and then they, you know, they're back in another form. And some will choose to stay, and some will go and they'll jump back into this life again and relive it all over again, but with different lessons, or to conquer the same ones. And
no, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I just want to go home.
Well, listen, that ties into what you said earlier, how you're like, oh, as a child, I felt like I didn't belong and there was more to this. Maybe because it makes me cringe when people say, oh, well, I'm an old soul, because like they don't even understand what it means. But right. Maybe you actually are an old soul, and maybe this lifetime is, you're like, okay, I'm doing what I'm doing. Maybe it's time for me to go home to that realm and stay there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was definitely designed, for lack of a way, better way of putting it, to do what I do. I think that my, you know, my experience, my feelings as a young girl, a very young child, and then the paranormal experiences that I've had, my spiritual journey that I embarked on, I don't think I was supposed to stay on that journey. And then life took over and had some hard lessons. But and then I became a paranormal investigator. And I think that I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, at least with this aspect of my life. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe that does mean I'm an old soul and I'm, you know, I don't have to come back after. I don't know. Maybe there's a reason for this. Maybe on some level, I'm hypothesizing here. Maybe on some level, I remembered,
you know, yeah. Unconsciously at least. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? But I mean,
I'll find out someday.
Yeah. But when you say that, you probably feel it in here, in the heart and the soul, and it resonates with you. So there's something to that. You're not just pulling it out of the ether, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to do a lot of thinking tonight when I go to bed.
A couple of other things. And then I'm going to go into my final question for you, and this will really get you thinking. So I apologize if your mind starts worrying after this, because it might, but, how should I say this? Through this training, you can specifically communicate and tap in with people who have passed, like old relatives and whatnot. And I've done it.
Wow.
The first time I did it, though, before I even knew what this mode of training was, I did it on a journey and ran into two long past relatives and received advice and conversed with them before I knew what any of this was. So as you can imagine, that like almost broke me.
I bet.
But then in the training, I'll just say I connected with a very specific one who died when I was very young, who I don't consciously remember, but is still talked about to this day because of the impact they had on everybody, you know? Yeah. And just to tie it up into paranormal field or into your wheelhouse, now this, you know, I don't know if this is the ultimate explanation or authority, but this training makes an argument that these souls being stuck in what's known as the middle world, which is like the earth, but the unseen realm of the earth, is what causes hauntings and paranormal activity, because those souls, whatever place they are in, are still residually attached to those places. And I don't know if shamans and paranormal investigators have ever come together on this. And I don't know if they ever will, because it's just two totally different things. And like I said, I don't know if it's an answer or if it's an ultimate finality on the subject, but it kind of makes sense to me. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, I'm going. So, I mean, I had a conversation with a teammate last night, and we were talking about, she asked me if I believed in mediums or not. And, you know, for me, it's just not a very, something that I can say clearly yes or no. I just can't. I have had readings with mediums and have had interactions with all clear mediums where I was blown away, but I still question. It can't be a yes or no for me, right?
Yeah.
And so, and part of the reason for that, and I wasn't able to articulate this very well with her last night, part of the reason why I struggle with it is that I've known a lot of mediums, and some of, you know, when you ask them one specific question about what's there on the other side, and you might get three or four different answers.
Yeah.
And each one really is emphatic about what their knowledge is, right? I mean, I spoke to a medium friend last night. She's just lovely. And she's probably, for me, she's the one that makes me really believe.
Okay. You know,
I can't go into details, but she's that one that kind of makes me lean to the yes side. Mm-hmm. Right? But I just still have so many questions. I just don't know, you know?
Yeah. This is a subject that comes up a lot on the show, and I've had mediums and psychics on the show, and we're almost out of time here, Kelly, but I almost think I got to have you on sometime down the road just to discuss this topic alone, because
I'd love to.
We have a couple of different schools of thought on it, I think, and I could tell you want to discuss and learn more, but we're out of time now, so we can't do it, unfortunately.
I'd love to.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. But I just want to say before I get to my final question, Google psychopomp. Type psychopomp into Google and then just kind of explore it, because like you'll get a better explanation than anything I gave you. I just gave you basic nuts and bolts.
Yeah,
and there's a Tea Party song with the same name off of one of their albums. It's pretty cool too. I don't know if it has any connection to the
band.
Oh yeah, yeah. But they do have a song named Psychopomp. That's where I first heard it. And I just want to say psychopomp has some parallels to mediumship, but I think it's way different at the same time.
How do you spell that? So psycho.
Okay, it's psycho and then P-O-M-P.
Okay, that's what I got, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it comes from like an old Greek term or word. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you'll find it. You'll find it when you look it up.
For sure.
Yeah.
As we get off, I will.
Yeah, and I hope others look it up as well. Once again, I do apologize if your mind starts worrying and you can't get to sleep later.
No, my mind will be keeping me awake because it's going to be processing all of this and wanting more answers.
Well, one of the taglines of this show is stay curious, and that's just what we do. So, Kelly, thanks again for the time. My final question is, what is on your bucket list of places you would like to investigate, whether it's local in the BC interior or somewhere around the world, if you ever get the opportunity to travel and check out some famous locales?
You know, I've been asked that question many times, and I've seen the question asked of others so many times, and everyone has an answer, and I just don't.
Okay.
And I'm being honest. I mean, if I could investigate anywhere right now, it would be any place in Scotland, because I have family history there. But also, I don't know. Scotland's cool, and it's old, and there's just this love of Scotland for me. Can I say any specific location? No. For me, there's value in history and energy and activity anywhere you go. You just never know what you're going to get. I mean, I could say I want to investigate one of the historic castles in Scotland. I might not find it as interesting as I might find as a little old sugar shack in North Burnaby.
Yeah, totally, totally. Right?
You just don't know. And look at the experience I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And just a quick shout out to a past unexplained episode I had on this young lady, Stephanie, from Scotland. She hosts the Scottish and Scared podcast, where she goes into a lot of haunted histories of her homeland. And what I did with her is I did something different, is I went through episode by episode of her show, because her shows are a bit shorter and she's only posted so many episodes. So I got an amazing download of a history lesson in Scotland, and I may send you the link for that episode, because I think you'll really eat it up.
That would be so cool. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, no problem. Awesome. Will do. So, Kelly, where can people connect with you or find out more about the Vancouver Paranormal Society?
Well, they can go on our website at vancouverparanormalsociety.net. We're also on Facebook page. We have a Facebook page, a group page. We also are on Twitter and Instagram.
There you go. And Kelly, I'll just say this in closing. I said this to Jason last week. Whatever you do, don't send her your photo. She doesn't want to look at
them. You know what? While I say that, I will always look at things that people present to me. I will always have those phone conversations, even if it turns out not to be paranormal, but maybe mental health.
Oh, yeah.
What we do, and that can be a whole nother show too. I mean, what we do is we support in any way we can, because there's the amount of people that contact me requiring our services that actually have mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
It would be terrible of me to push them away.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that just goes that you are a person of service. So keep it up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. There we go, true believers. Kelly Claire Berg from the Vancouver Paranormal Society. Man, that went to some cool places I was not expecting. So we'll definitely have to pick up the chat, especially on the part on psychic mediums, the next time she is on. I felt like we were just starting to rock and roll, and then it was time to wrap up. But That's just how the show goes sometimes, and I love hearing the perspective from paranormal investigators that remain grounded with both feet to the floor and don't get sucked into the ether by what they hope or what they might think they see. Because as fantastic and as unbelievable as this work is, you still got to keep your feet on the ground and your head out of the clouds as much as possible, because like Jason says, you know, we all want to believe, but that doesn't mean we need to necessarily run wild with every little thing that we see. So next week on Unexplained Incorporated, we're celebrating Black Nobility Friday, and it's going to be with the lovely Jennifer Schluter. She is joining us from South Africa. And she's a native of Germany, but has lived all over the world and traveled throughout quite a large chunk of it. We're going to talk about that. We recorded this one a little while back, her and I, to fit our schedules together. And her and I were both on a bit of a time crunch on that one. And similar to this interview with Kelly, we were really just starting to roll, and then it was almost time to wrap up. So I'll have to have her back on the show soon for another edition of the Lightworker series. But Jennifer, she's a hypnotherapist, but she also does past life regression and other spiritual modalities that include channeling. And we talk about it a little bit next week, but we couldn't get into as much as I would have liked to due to time constraints. But just to add up... to get that episode up to usual time, I take some interesting examinations on Black Friday and what it's, you know, really doing to us as a society. You're going to want to check that one out, especially if you feel like putting your tinfoil hat on. I don't necessarily shy away from those topics, so strap in, and it's going to be a fun one to close out the month of November with the Lightworker series. But still, you almost have to put these paranormal investigators as Lightworkers too, especially with what Kelly said at the end about how some people who reach out to them are dealing with some form of mental illness and in extreme distress, and you can't necessarily just hang up on them and leave them hanging. You have to try and help them or at least guide them to somewhere where they can get the help that they need. And it's a very difficult position to be in, but it just shows that whether you're doing it as an investigator or a hypnotherapist or what have you, the empathy really needs to be there alongside with the passion. So in regards to my major announcement for Unexplained 100, airing next February, myself and Jason Hewlett will be collaborating on an interview for the very first time. He's been kind enough to be a guest on this program twice. He got me in touch with Kelly for this interview because they have a history together. They've worked together at different times and interacted. And I got Jason to reach out to someone. And all I'll say for now is that this person surprisingly said yes. And I'm not trying to discredit myself or the show. It's just, it was a bit of a Hail Mary, and it looks like it's ended up in the end zone. And it is going to turn into a game-winning touchdown by the looks of things. And it's going to be recorded in December due to scheduling and logistics, but it's going to sit around in the can for a good 2 months before it gets revealed. And Jason and myself will be collaborating on this interview. As for the guest, I'm not going to reveal who that is yet. We're going to save that major announcement for down the road. But in my estimation, it is fairly major, at least in the neck of these here woods. And I'll leave you a small breadcrumb. If you're a fan of the case study segment, which we are going to be ending in the spring of 2022, then you are going to love Unexplained 100. And that's all I'm going to get to from there. So if you want to interact with me, or you want to share your own paranormal experiences or send me photos and videos, shoot me an email at phantomphilunexplained@gmail.com. That's all one word, no underscores or anything. And if I can't discern what's going on with your media, I can forward it on to someone who can and maybe get you some answers. Give the show a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Unexplained Incorporated, PhantomPhil3 on Twitter. But I'm really active on my own Instagram page, PhantomPhilUnexplained. And Facebook group email list coming soon, as we want to build a stronger, more established community of the true believers and get more interactive. Well, that's it for this edition of the Friday Night Fright. Hope you enjoyed it, as it was a really good one. Don't know if Kelly and I's collective tanks were running at 100%, but I think we fed off the energy once we got going, and man, it was fun. But in the meantime, until next week when we congregate for Black Nobility Friday, have no fear, because it is another edition of the Lightworker series, and it is a duty for each and every one of you to stay strong, stay healthy, and most importantly, stay curious. As for another week, the doors of Unexplained Incorporated are now closed.